So it's the top of the hour, and I'm Lynn Nagel, and on behalf of Peggy White and myself, I'd like to welcome all of you to our first virtual seminar for the National Nursing Data Standards Initiative. And it's really quite exciting to see how many people have joined us already, and we anticipate that we'll have quite a good showing today. I'm not going to spend a lot of time up front talking to you, but wanted to just welcome everybody. And I see we have people from right across the country, and I see we have Jeanette Gogler from Australia. Welcome. So it's really wonderful to reconvene in this very strange time that we're living in. And I do trust that everyone is keeping well. And unfortunately, we were unable to convene as per the past 4 years. And Peggy and I decided that we should keep the ball moving and at least offer some virtual conversation opportunities and to bring you up to speed with some of the work that's been going on since we met last May. So today is the first of four sessions that we'll be hosting. And I'd like to acknowledge right up front the CNIA for your support and platform in allowing us to deliver this webinar today. I'd also like to acknowledge Canada Health InfoWay and Cerner Corporation for their support of this event. And as always, we've seen, you know, consistent support from companies such as these two entities, but we continue to see a lot of support for the work that we're doing. And I think you'll be quite excited as the course of our seminars unfold to hear what's been going on, because there has been a lot of work underway for the last year and a bit. Peggy, I don't know if you have anything you want to add. Just a couple of quick housekeeping items. We will be sending out in advance of each of the upcoming sessions a notification as to the time and Zoom connection information. Our next session is scheduled for October 28th. And if you haven't received that information already, you can let us know. We can get that to you. But all of the program information is posted to the CNIA website, so you can actually see what the upcoming speaker sessions look like. And hopefully you'll be able to join us for some of these future sessions as well. We will allow for time at the end of the session. We'll hear from both of our speakers. Both of them will have approximately 20 minutes. And then we will take time at the end for questions. The session is being recorded. So if any of your colleagues were unable to attend today, please let them know that the recording will be made available and will be posted on the CNIA website with the slides, with the permission of each of the presenters. So all of the materials will be available subsequent to today's session. And I do hope you hold your questions, hoping we can have some dialogue at the end of today's session. And we will aim to get you promptly finished up today within the hour. So without further ado, I think what I will do is just ask Peggy, do you have anything that I've forgotten that you want to add?
No, I don't think so. That's good, Lynn.
Okay, great. And so we will be posting some evaluation questions after the fact and would appreciate your feedback if you have a few minutes to please complete that. All right, so our first speaker is Alyssa Bryan, and Alyssa comes to us from the Health Standards Organization, which many of you will be most familiar with the component of that organization, which focuses on accreditation. And Alyssa is a program manager. She can tell you a little bit more about herself if she wishes, but I'm going to turn it over to her, and we'll see if we can get your slides up, Alyssa.
All right, thanks, Lynn. Oh, you guys can see?
Yes, we can.
You're good.
Thank you. All right, so my name is Elisa Bryan, and I'm also a registered nurse. And as Lynn mentioned, I'm a program manager with health standards organizations. So I work on the standards and evidence development team. And before we get into the presentation, I wanted to acknowledge that here in Ottawa, I'm located on the unceded traditional territory of the Algonquin Anishinaabe peoples. And I was looking at the screen of names and I noticed one that I'm not sure how common it is, but Barb Davies, I think was one of my profs in nursing school. It's the same one at Ottawa U. So that was the only
thing. Unfortunately, it's not the same one, but I do know who you're speaking of.
Okay.
So anyway. It is, and I'm a nurse as well, but no, unfortunately, we're not the same people.
Okay, well... I think I might be more reassured by that than not having one of my former profs, but who knows? I didn't look at all the names. So anyways, so today I'm going to be talking about HSO 76000 Integrated People-Centered Health Systems Standard and how it can support nursing information and knowledge to improve the health of people and communities. And in terms of my nursing background, you know, I worked in critical care. I also worked for Ottawa Public Health. And more recently, HSO doing standards, so more research-based. So in terms of health standards organization, as Lynn mentioned, we are associated with Accreditation Canada. So HSO is a standards development organization that is accredited by the Standards Council of Canada. So that means that once our standard is developed, it becomes a national standard of Canada. So that's to say that we follow a really rigorous, unbiased, and balanced process. Our standards are developed in 7 stages, going from 0 to 60. And that includes literature review, an environmental scan, as well as a 60-day public review period, and then a final approval stage. And so this is how we develop standards, and it takes anywhere from 18 to 24 months. When we develop our standards, we work with technical committees that have represent 4 different membership categories. So we have patients and families, we have service providers, we also have the general interest category and policymakers. So obviously patients and families are those who have lived experience. Service providers can be anyone from, you know, a clinician to also an administrator within a healthcare organization. Policymakers are generally from ministries or regulatory bodies or professional associations. And then the general interest is usually researchers or academia. In terms of the integration standard, it's really the first of its kind, and it's a global standard. So that means that it's intended for Canadian and international health and social service organizations or ministries as well. And why it's one of the first of our kind is really because of the target audience, which I'll get into on the next slide. But it essentially provides best practice and evidence-informed guidance that is feasible, actionable, flexible, and adaptable to local context. So we know with integrated health systems that they're going to vary in their structure and in their approaches to meeting integration and meeting the needs of their populations. And it has to vary depending on local context or jurisdictional laws or how health systems are really even set up. So that's to say that the content within the standard is, you know, non-prescriptive so that it is adaptable to these different systems. And it doesn't promote any single approach. It's really just kind of guidance around key themes for integration. So the intended audience is policymakers and system partners. And why it's different from our other standards is that most of our other standards are really targeted at single organizations or even like a regional health authority. So it's more of that service provider audience, whereas this one includes policymakers because it's acknowledged that integration really requires collaboration at all the different levels and sectors. So for this standard, it's the first time that we're having that broader target audience. So policymakers in the standard are defined as individuals, organizations, and regulatory bodies, among others, that create, monitor, and oversee policies, procedures, legislation, or regulation related to health and social services. Whereas system partners are really health and social service providers and organizations that work in collaboration with the people and communities that they serve to achieve the best possible individual and collective health and well-being outcomes. So the standard is divided into 10 key design principles, and the design principles originally stemmed from a systematic review that was done in 2009 by Esther Suter and Nellie Olk and colleagues. And they are both on our technical committee, representing different provinces on the technical committee. And each one of these design principles with the technical committee was updated to kind of reflect more recent approaches and themes regarding health system integration. So it really has, each design principle has criteria and guidelines that are aimed at the two different audiences. And some of those guidelines are common amongst the two audiences because they need to be doing similar activities, whereas some of the guidelines are more specific to that audience. So for policymakers, we might talk more about establishing policy or mandating certain things. And then system partners is, you know, how they can fulfill the requirements of that criteria at a more operational level. And even though I said it doesn't have any specific approach, which it doesn't, these 10 themes or principles are really understood and common around what needs to happen in order to achieve health and social service integration. And for today's presentation, I'm really going to be focusing on design principle number 8, which is interoperable information systems, which was really a design principle that until I worked on this chapter, I had very little information about interoperable IT systems, other than knowing that it needed to be implemented and available. So the design principle 8, was really informed by CIHI's Health Data and Information Governance and Capability Framework. So the criteria within the standard chapter are really organized around these four main approaches or branches of the framework. And we worked with Eric Sutherland at CIHI to align the content. It's a really comprehensive framework, and you could build an entire standard around IT systems. So it's really aligned around the, I think it's 14 or 17 foundational elements of that framework and how it supports, you know, nursing knowledge and information is really about how it's supporting access to real-time information. It's supporting quality improvement initiatives through standardized information. It helps translate data into useful information, which is always, you know, a key aspect. You can have tons of data, but, you know, what can you garner from that data? And all of that information to assist in things like discharge planning or health system planning or decision making, for example. It helps improve the sharing of clinical information with the healthcare team across the continuum of care. And it's really also aimed at improving system performance. So the overall objectives of the standard are really what you see in the slide of this design principle, I should say, not of the entire standard, but, you know, identifying a shared data and information governance framework, establishing and maintaining the digital platforms and that information technology environment, having the policies and procedures and infrastructure required to support information life cycles, and then really designing, implementing, and evaluating the effectiveness of your IT systems and digital platforms, as well as policies and procedures with the stakeholders and the people and communities that you're serving. All of our standards have a glossary of terms. And as we know, language really does matter. And people need to be able to speak the same language, especially when it comes to highly technical terms. You know, when it comes to IT, a lot of terms are used interchangeably or incorrectly. So the standard has you know, lots and lots of different glossary terms that are defined, but there are a number of them that are specifically defined in alignment with Chapter 8. And so I know, speaking for myself, this was not a lot of language that I was familiar with. And when we were working with Eric at Kaihai, like, I felt like I was doing a thesis on IT systems, even though we were just like scraping the top and barely getting past the surface. But, you know, in terms of patient safety, making sure that you're using this language in the right context is really important. And it's really important for service providers and administrators who are using those platforms and who are working with the standards and the policies to use them correctly. So the glossary does define a few different terms that are commonly used incorrectly, such as interoperable information systems and population health. So now getting into the more specifics of the actual criteria. So under the framework branch of strategy and governance, we really talk about establishing the shared data and information governance framework to do a number of different things. So we talk about developing accountability, decision rights, communication and escalation processes, having an information data governance officer or equivalent, as well as the required workforce to really oversee data and information management policies and all those processes, building and managing an inventory of data sets, maintaining policies and procedures that really address privacy and security, and access controls that are all based on legislation and ethical practice, and being transparent with stakeholders. The criterion that we talk about Indigenous data and information governance principles, you know, in Canada, we have First Nations, Inuit, and Métis peoples and groups. And for example, with First Nations, there are existing data and information governance protocols established, such as OCAP, which stands for ownership, control, access, and possession. So that criterion really gets into, you know, adhering to established information, data and information governance protocols, or when they're not established is working with Indigenous peoples and communities or organizations to discuss how data information is going to be collected and shared back with Indigenous communities, establishing memoranda of understanding about how that's all going to play out so that we're respectful of Indigenous knowledge and information, as well as collecting Indigenous specific population health and well-being data. So a lot of the time, Indigenous specific data fields don't exist. And need to be incorporated into those IT systems or platforms. And then really training the workforce about Indigenous data and information governance principles. So what I was gonna mention prior to getting into the context specifically is that I just cherry picked a few of the criteria. So the chapter itself has a total of 13 criteria with associated guidelines, but for the purposes of today's presentation, I just am keeping it at a high level. So under policies and processes, we're talking about things that, you know, again, are kind of still foreign to me, like data catalogs and data inventories or a data dictionary. We talk about harmonizing privacy policies, procedures, and practices across the health system. Oftentimes, you know, large organizations like a hospital will have their own policies and procedures, but that they're not necessarily aligning with those of other system partners within the health system. One thing that Eric talked a lot about was how policymakers really need to support system partners in interpreting privacy legislation, and how, you know, really strict interpretations of this privacy legislation, you know, can hinder having access to timely and accurate health information, because when it's interpreted strictly, you know, a system partner won't be sharing relevant information for another provider to make an informed decision about the client's health and well-being, or for the client themselves to take on those decisions. So we also talk about developing near real-time personal health records, mandating training for system partners to ensure that they have the knowledge and understanding and skills to effectively use near real-time health records, and having appropriate data and information analytics, digital technology platforms to ensure the confidentiality, integrity, and accessibility of data. In terms of assets and standards, you know, again, we're talking about funding the establishment of interoperable information systems. So ensuring that there is the resources available to incorporate and implement those. I know electronic health records and electronic medical records, you know, are hugely costly, and that doesn't even account necessarily for the training that goes into the, you know, to actually implement it in an accurate and useful way. We talk about having minimum data sets and ensuring that there are processes so that data sets can be updated to reflect the changing demographics of the defined population. So for example, if you only have binary data fields for male and female, like how will you know if you have you know, a larger transgender population that could benefit from a different kind of service, for example. We talk about training the workforce on data capture standards. So obviously, you know, different clinicians, if there haven't been training on how to capture the information properly, then we have huge variation in how information is being, or how data is being captured, which affects the usefulness of that information. We talk about using information technology systems that are safe for people and communities, user-friendly, easy to implement, culturally safe and relevant, secure, and adaptable and flexible to meet those changing needs. And finally, in alignment with the fourth branch of the CAIHI framework is people and knowledge. And this people-centered care and people and knowledge is something that's interwoven throughout the entire standard. It's a main philosophy of HSO, and was hugely, you know, beneficial that there was an alignment with the CAIHI framework on this aspect, because we really follow the nothing about me without me philosophy. So really this is about, you know, ensuring transparency with regard to data and information life cycle practices, developing approaches to engage stakeholders and the people and communities you serve to provide feedback and evaluate all of these policies and processes that are being implemented, disseminating information about governance practices to the public, and providing information that is easy for the public to understand. It's specific and direct and uses plain language. And also aligning communications amongst different system partners so that communication around IT and digital platform and frameworks and policies are consistent and coordinated. So that concludes my presentation on the HSO 76000 Integrated People-Centered Health Systems Standard. And how it can really support nursing information and knowledge to improve the health of the people and communities that we are working with. And if there was going to be one main takeaway from this presentation, I would say that although like there's been lots and lots of progress made in terms of interoperable IT systems, there's still a long way to go. As I mentioned, this chapter really only covers the foundational elements of CIHI's frameworks. So there's a lot that can be done, and obviously nurses have a huge role to play in leading the way with regards to interoperable systems and data and information and how we can use that information to improve the health of, and well-being of clients and families. So if you want to learn more about the standard, you can go to our website. It's in its final stages of development. So it should be available in the e-store by the end of November. We are in that final stage 60. So it's basically imminent and it will be available. And there's a few different webinars that HSO has done on integrated care, as well as on the standard and other of the design principles, such as shared governance. So thank you very much.
Fantastic. Thank you, Alyssa. That's very, very informative. And I think our audience will find a lot of the comments that you've shared with us today, potentially new information for some folks, but also aligned very much with a lot of the conversations that we've been having over the course of a number of years now. So we'll have time for questions after our next presentation. So I'd like to turn this over now to Lynn McNeely. And those of you who have participated in our symposia in the past will remember Lynn from previous sessions. And Lynn is going to be talking to us about sort of the data standards that underpin health human resource planning. And so Lynn, as a manager of the health workforce information, is very well position to talk to us about what's happening at CIHI on this front. So Lynn, over to you.
Thanks, Lynn. And can you see my screen, the first slide?
We can. Thank Great. You.
All right. And I just want to thank Alyssa and even note that Peggy and Lynn, what a great job at putting the two of us together. I don't know if it was serendipitous, but Alyssa, you very nicely teed me up now to bring it down to a little bit of a lower level in referring to data standards and providing some specific tangible examples. And I certainly can empathize with you in your plight. I've been at CIHI for 12 years. So I still am in that learning mode. I mentioned earlier, I have two monitors and very often one of them has Google on it to search terms. I've got a bit of it under my belt now. I am a registered nurse myself as well. I spent 15 years in clinical and case management practice in both acute and community settings. And as I mentioned, I've been at CIHI for going on 12 years, working when I started leading products around using home care and long-term care data, did a two-year stint in ITS, where did much of the things you talked about, Alyssa, working with Eric as well. And actually Eric wasn't even at CIHI at that time, but he was at Ontario eHealth, but that's where I got to know him. And then as Lynn has just pointed out, I've been the manager of the health workforce information team now for about a year and a half. And in the interview, I used the fact that I was in the database to hopefully sell me in getting the job. So I'm hoping that works. But what we're gonna do is, if I can just sit. Now I have to figure out how to advance my slide in this way. There we go. So I'm gonna kick it off a bit with about who CIHI is and what we do, and then very quickly look at standards from the Canadian perspective, and Liz has very nicely teed that off, as well as outlining the capacity that they enable and talk a bit about what CIHI's role is in it. Again, Liz shared some of that, but we'll take a deeper dive and use the focus of health workforce itself, because that's the area I work in. And finally, we'll look at the evolution of standards by understanding what the needs are for data and information, and I'll actually weave that concept throughout the presentation. Starting off with a bit of background on CIHI. So we are funded by federal, provincial, and territorial levels of government. The majority of that coming from Health Canada. We are independent and a not-for-profit organization and have been in existence for over 25 years. We provide trusted data and statistics to support decision-making for the healthcare system. And we have a strategic plan that guides us in doing that. That plan was up for renewal in 2022, but that was paused as a result of COVID-19. It had to pause some of the consultation work that was going on. Has recently resumed, but has pushed out that new plan for another year. So it will be available in 2023. So we'll just have the current one continue to guide us in the interim. Much of what we do is provide quality data standards, tools and methods, as well as actionable analysis that informs healthcare for Canadians, performance of the health system itself, as well as addressing population health needs. So that's those things where Alyssa was talking about. It's very important to understand the definitions of each of those in order to get to the things that we want to do with the data in terms of comparability. This year, of no surprise to anybody, one of the most pressing health system goals is focusing on reducing infections and improving outcomes for COVID-19. And much of Kaya's recent work has focused on supporting this through available data and information, as well as efforts to create new data, of which the backbone to collect that data is what we're gathered here to talk about today, which is standards. So I mentioned that one of Kaya's strategic goals centers around providing quality data standards. And when you hear the word standard, it conjures up images of something simple, even something singular. But as this cartoon depicts, unfortunately, sometimes that can be quite far from the reality. And when you add on top of that, the complexity of Canada's healthcare system, the idea and the implementation of standards in healthcare can become quite complicated. For example, the concept of one healthcare number, which uniquely identifies all Canadians using the same methodology throughout their lifetime as they move across provinces and territories, does not exist. And there are a few levers outside of funding that exist for mandatory implementation of such concepts. In fact, a very recent example in the media within the past couple of days is Premier Legault out of Quebec and his reaction to Prime Minister Trudeau's comments on what long-term care should look like within the provinces and territories. So essentially, you know, reconfirming that it is a provincial and territorial area jurisdiction. So in the absence of those levers, the focus for implementation or buy-in rests with understanding the value. Within the health workforce, that value can be seen within building things like building capacity for interdisciplinary planning and across jurisdiction, and it includes areas such as when you're doing system level planning for the workforce, integrate the professions. So don't just look at physicians in isolation or nurses in isolation, but pulling them together along with other key professions. Understanding migration patterns. So where are health professionals working and moving across and between provinces and territories, and even between countries? That was also an issue with and continues to be an issue with the pandemic. As policy changes, borders close, how do you do health workforce planning? So in order to do that, you have to know where the people are, and that can be done by looking at the data. Planning urban versus rural needs. Sometimes the models of care can be quite different in different geographic areas, and it might be completely appropriate that they're different, but having the ability to measure that and ensure they're still having good outcomes of care despite having, or not despite, or in light of having different models, you need the data in order to do that. Ensuring a healthy workforce, as well as since we have a publicly funded health care system, enabling self-quality and cost-effective care. The other piece, other two pieces, so one of them, Alyssa very nicely provided an overview in terms of the ability to have interoperable and linkable data and making it accessible for use, as well as the ability to compare to peers and set benchmarks for evidence based decisions. All of these, the standards, having standardized data is the backbone for. So if you have quality standardized data, you can begin to understand with confidence key policy and research questions that get at doing some of those things that I just described around building capacity. If you start with the question, it then helps define the data that is needed to shape what should be captured within a standard. And I'll break down what that looks like in just a minute. We have done a fair amount of recent consultation over the past year to better understand what is needed to support health workforce planning in Canada. And what you're seeing on the screen are some of the priority questions that exist for our stakeholders. And of course, COVID-19 has added a few more, including things like is the surge capacity of priority health professions? Do we have a healthy workforce to sustain care? And have ethnic, diverse, and Indigenous populations been marginalized? So in order to get at answering some of those questions, we need to have the data and the information to support it. So this slide, what it attempts to do is deconstruct one of those policy questions. So looking at which staffing models provide the best outcomes of care. If we break that down and we take the piece around staffing models, what would help to inform that are health workforce data standards. So getting at things like which types of providers, the full-time, part-time status of them, languages they can provide services in, levels of education needed. And then when you're looking to measure how they impact outcomes of care, to inform that are clinical and patient experience type data standards. And there's many examples of those, including CCOBIC, which I know this group has been key in pulling together, as well as a number of the NRI data standards. In terms of patient experience, CHI-HI has a minimum data standard for that. And NRI also has a quality of life survey, which gets at some patient experience type concepts. So the backbone of those data standards are things called content standards. So that includes content, terminology, and classification standards. So it's getting at those common definitions that Alyssa was referring to. And when you have that, that allows you to integrate and link the data in order that you can compare set benchmarks and support evidence-based types of decisions. Going along with that are technical type of standards. And this includes areas such as messaging standards. An example would be the HL7 FHIR standard. So FHIR is F-H-I-R. And what this does, it enables data to move between systems, which makes it accessible and available for use. So it's a very technical thing, but it's key in our age of electronic medical records in the ability to move and use the data. Zeroing in on health workforce in particular, there is one national standard that exists and it is published by CHI-HI. It's called the CHI-HI Health Human Resource Minimum Data Standard. It was created to support ministries and professions looking to collect standardized data about the health workforce. It covers domains such as demographics, distribution patterns, that collects things like postal code, supply and employment numbers, as well as information around education. We also have profession-specific data dictionaries. So Alyssa, I had a smile on my face when you mentioned learning about what those are. So we published them as well. And that's in response to there being specific needs around specific professions. And we have them for the four regulated nursing types, as well as occupational therapists, physios, and pharmacists. So what this data does is we pull it in from the minimum data standard that's actually used by nursing colleges, for example. The data is captured, we make it available through a number of products. So health workforce information products, and you see some of examples of our most recent nursing ones there that were released this past spring. And the objective is to help support stakeholders with their planning. But we have heard from them in that consultation that we've been doing over the past year that they would like us to continue to evolve it to provide a more complete and timely picture of what the health workforce looks like. So that input that we gained, and it was part of a broader health workforce strategy that we've been doing at CHI-I. It foundational to realizing it is updating our own HHR NDS to help fill those gaps. It was actually last updated in 2013, so it's been some time. Very much what Alyssa was stating, that you need to stay on top of it with regular update cycles. So that's a process we're looking to change. We're hoping to change it we haven't decided on it yet, but it will likely be every 3 to 5 years. And we know it requires modernization because it's outdated in a number of the response sets for questions, for example, questions that look at areas of responsibility, positions, and places of work. In fact, we don't even account for primary care as a place of work, and we don't have things up and coming, things like virtual care. There's telemedicine on there, but certainly what the pandemic has highlighted and won't be going away is the virtual care that health workforce will be providing. We also recognize the importance of being able to integrate this data with other data sources, as shown earlier, and having the ability to answer relevant policy and research questions. And that includes aspects such as a unique identifier and facility level information. So I mentioned we currently have postal code level, but we can't get at specifics at, you know, looking at models of care within specific facilities. And if you want to do true system level workforce planning, we know we need broader coverage of record level data for different professions. So I mentioned the ones that we have. We also have record level data on physicians. It comes in a bit different in terms of the billing data. It gives actually more opportunities because there's a greater level of detail in that data, but it too is missing data around areas such as geography to help truly do workforce planning. We're committed to working with stakeholders to advance this work. The rationale for the strategy work that is taking place now is so that we can actually embed it in that renewed CHI-I strategy that will take place now in 2023. And of course, always looking for opportunities to leverage collecting the data once and using it multiple ways. And an example of that is how we bring in the health workforce data. So the majority of it comes from regulatory colleges where we take what they collect and we map it to our own CHI-I HHR MDS. But we're hoping to do less of the mapping and actually have it collected at the source using the standard that we're mapping to. So here are some of the steps that we've taken to date to actually advance the work. I won't go through everything, but you can see that there's been an extensive amount of stakeholder consultation that has happened along the way, along with what's to come. And there's some quite exciting work taking place now. And if anything, the pandemic done has really motivated people to come together unlike any other time in history and really work together. So taking down, you know, those territorial barriers that sometimes exist with really having the same objective of having good data and information to really answer those key questions during a critical time. You'll see on there one of the big ticket items that we know there's a massive gap in, and it's very important for nurses as well, is around the profession of personal support worker. And if you think about one of the main stories in the pandemic was around long-term care and what happened in our long-term care homes, you know, primarily in Quebec and in Ontario. And a big part of that story is missing because we don't have standardized data around the largest profession that exists that provides care within long-term care homes, which is the personal support worker population. So we're looking to advance that by creating some standardized data. And that's really all I had. So we was just gonna end it on where we started, but with a much more optimistic lens than that original cartoon, but noting that we know that the solution can often be quite simple. The complexity seems to come in when you introduce things like people and governance and processes and so on. But if we we think about the end goal driven by what we are looking to answer, it can help steer our path and objective to use standards to gather relevant data and information. And then this then supports those evidence-based decisions that affect the health of all Canadians. And that's all I have. And I think we have now time for some questions. And I'll just stop sharing my screen.
Thanks so much, Lynn. That's fantastic. Yes, if it wasn't for people and governance structures and those kinds of things, wouldn't it be so easy?
Wouldn't it?
So we do have a few questions already in the chat box, so I'm going to start there. Alyssa, this first one is directed to you. You state that the standard is aimed at policymakers. So how does the Health Standards Organization disseminate to policymakers, and at what level?
So it's true that typically, like for accreditation, we're obviously accrediting health and social service organizations. So policymakers are not our typical audience, although we do engage quite a bit with Health Canada, PHAC, as well as other national organizations that do set policy. It also depends on which country we're talking about, because in some countries in Europe and in other parts of the world where we are present and doing accreditation, it's really at the ministry level. In Canada, you know, we do work with ministries and we liaise with them. Mainly health ministries, I would say. In terms of regulatory bodies, we do have the EQUAL program, which is just how educational institutions establish their education and training curricula. So we do have standards for allied health professionals. But it's really like the standard itself is currently not going to be used for accreditation, because what we heard from our stakeholders is that they're not ready to be accredited against health system integration standards. Like, why would you sign up for accreditation if, you know, you're automatically going to fail because you're not quite at like that far in your journey towards integration? So we really wanted to make this document accessible and to be used as a resource to help along like the beginnings of those journeys, or depending on where you are on your integration journey. And the content of the standard does reflect different policymakers. So we might talk about, you know, regulatory bodies and educational institutions establish like curricula on how to do team-based care, for example, because really the training on team-based care should be starting at the undergrad and graduate levels and training clinicians to do those kinds of things. So we might not be, you know, specifically targeting all those policymakers, but it's really important for each audience to know what each other should be doing to achieve integration. So you can lobby or advocate for those types of things, even if it's not within your realm of control. So hope that answers the question.
Okay, thank you. Next question for you, Lynn. We have and continue to struggle with the uptake of data sets like CHOBIC, which is clinical data and would seemingly be perceived as valuable to healthcare organizations. But the struggle is ongoing, and we're wondering whether or not you find this with other types of data. Is this a unique situation that we're facing?
No. So I had mentioned about trying to streamline that process with the regulatory colleges. So currently we have to do a mapping. And you have to make concessions when you do mapping. It would be much simpler if there was an implementation of the standard itself, but that the challenge we've had with the regulatory colleges, it often comes back to what they're mandated to do. And they're mandated to provide the public with a competent workforce. So often they see what, you know, we're trying to do with secondary use of the data on our data standard as outside their scope. So it's trying to, do that value proposition, have that value proposition conversation, and then even bringing in other players in terms of ministry levels who are hold the lever of legislation. So what the legislation of scope of practice can be. So it again comes back to that maneuvering of conversations with multiple stakeholders at the table to get actual implementation. So it's like that last slide again. It can seem so simple, but when you have people and it's not even, you know, the regulatory colleges are well within their right to say that's their mandate, that is what they're set out to do. But it's that broader understanding of how it can be used. And that's why, Alyssa, the work that your organization doing is very important, and to bring that big picture comprehensive view and that overall getting it to that one standard is very key. But no, Lynn, same challenges. And just speak, that's the health workforce. I can go to many of my manager peers and they would have the same comment.
Okay, thank you. There is one of our participants was interested in finding out how many nurses die by suicide, but doesn't find anyone collecting those data. Is that something that Kaihai might entertain collecting?
I don't know that we'd ever get at specifically collecting that question, but it comes down to that ability to link data sets. Because the idea around the suicide, that's very much the clinician as a patient themselves, right? So they would be in the system as the patient. So it's the ability to link it through a de-identified way. And that comes back to the conversation around having unique identifiers, where you could find that same person as a clinician, also as a patient, but the purpose is not to identify who they are, but then to get a sense, you know, from an aggregate perspective, how many people that actually impacts. What we are starting to get at is around recognizing, and this came out in stakeholder consultation, is the health of the health workforce. So maybe not specifically at suicide, but definitely the mental health and other global impacts COVID is having among the health workforce. I chair a working group with the Public Health Agency of Canada, Statistics Canada, CHI and Health Canada, where our objective is to close the data gaps on the impact of the pandemic on the health workforce. And that will be one of our topics. So we actually have, you know, I'll do a plug. We have a survey coming out in next month on the use of PPE. So access and use of PPE and access to IPC principles. And it'll be a crowdsourcing survey. It's going to be Stats Canada who will send it out. But encouraging, you know, that it's, again, getting people to actually complete surveys. Surveys are harder because you need people to actually fill them in unless they're mandated, like the census. You're relying on people filling them in. But we're hoping we have a broad enough campaign that we can actually get a representative sample. And then in the spring, we're looking to do the global and mental health impacts of the pandemic. So certainly recognizing mental health among the workforce and nurses there are more nurses than any other health profession that we know in Canada. So it's definitely a key topic, and that's across ministries as well. Ministries, professional associations, that came out consistently across a number of different stakeholder groups as important in having more information.
Great, thank you. Alyssa, this question is for you. And the question is, how is HSO interfacing with Canada Health InfoWay, specifically linking to FHIR, Prescribe It, and the Engage initiatives?
I mean, we are working with all like the pan-Canadian healthcare organizations. Personally, in my work, you know, I'm not linking with InfoWay that much, although I've attended a few different meetings where the pan-Canadian orgs have been together. One thing that's difficult within standards is because they're global standards, they're meant to apply to national and international audiences. So we're usually pretty general when we talk about specific digital platforms or IT systems, because, you know, not everyone around the world is using these same ones, and there are so many different suppliers and initiatives going on. So from a standards perspective, we would never really mention any specific ones, so that they do fit all the different contexts that we're working in internationally. So unfortunately, I can't speak exactly to how HSO is engaging with our different stakeholders on that, but I know that there's, you know, pretty consistent communication and ongoing partnership building with many of those related organizations.
Okay, great. Thank you. Here's a different type of question, Lynn, for you. Question is whether or not CHI-HITE has published any current studies regarding preferred models of nursing care.
We usually toggle the line of being not objective, but that's the area we'd like to get into in terms of having data that can actually get at answering that. So it comes back to, you know, what staffing models provide the best outcomes of care. And we can't get there yet. We're missing a number of foundational pieces in order to do that, including the geography piece. So where are folks working? So when each of us fills in our registration form, we have to put in, you know, the facility of where we're working. That includes the name and the address. That information doesn't come to CHI-HITE. We started the conversation last year on actually getting that information transferred over. Can you think it would be a given? They have it. We did an environmental scan that says they all have it, but they don't see it within their mandate in sharing it with us. So we've been going through different avenues, going back again on the value proposition. And I shouldn't say they all. There definitely are some who are interested, and that. Once we get that, I think we can take our data much further in getting at answering that question, because then we can look at what those models of care are, and we can integrate it with our other data that actually, you know, reports on different types of outcomes in both the acute system and the long-term care system.
Right. Okay. Next question is really about whether or not you have been engaged in consultation with the various nursing unions, considering that they can be very helpful in thinking about the human health resources.
Yeah, absolutely. So the Canadian Federation of Nurses Unions, led by Linda Silas, Linda's on the top of our list of stakeholder engagement, and we have been in conversation throughout prior to and more so during the course of the pandemic, as has they've been engaged with the Public Health Agency of Canada as well. They've been very good at bringing matters forward, including what they think are the priority issues for nurses. So yes, we do consider them one of our key stakeholders.
Okay, excellent. And another question relative to integrating some of the concepts into curriculum. Is there anything specifically that either of you can recommend in terms of nursing curriculum integration of these concepts?
Well, I know the standard, like the integrated people-centered health system standards, like I said, we do look at educational institutions and regulatory bodies. So there's quite a bit of content where we would be talking about, like I mentioned, mandating or creating curricula on team-based care, for example, or how to work in interdisciplinary types of settings and models of care that increase access to health services, whether that be virtual health services. We also talk about having curricula around new leadership models. In health system integration, we are moving away from hierarchical leadership models to more collaborative and distributive leadership models. And we know nurses are often, you know, big leaders in healthcare organizations. So there's a lot of different areas of the standard that would relate to curricula, whether it could be at an undergrad or different levels of education, like master's, for example. So each design, and one of the other ones would be around the value of lived experience, for example. So people-centered care and how you can really engage with the people and communities you serve to understand their needs and make them, you know, active partners as members of the team. So the standard's coming out, it'll be available on the e-store in the next month or two. So there's quite a bit of content that can be accessed once the standard's available.
Excellent. All right. Well, we're at the top of the hour, folks. I'm going to cut off the discussion. Some great questions. There are a few more questions that have been posted. Lisa, I'm going to follow up with you about the whole issue of meaningful use. But I think just to let you all know, the presentations will be made available. They'll be posted on the CNIA website. Please do complete your evaluations. These will help us as we think about where we go after these virtual sessions. Thank you all for your time. Have a great day. Stay safe, stay well, and we look forward to seeing you in a couple of weeks. Thanks so much.
Thanks, everybody.
Hey, thank you.
Thank you.